is Offstage and On the Air, performance number 731. My name, as it is every Wednesday, is Lisa Sheps. I'm joined by my guest co-host, the incomparable Beau Paul.
Hello, Austin Theater community.
You are listening to us on KOOP HD1 HD3 Hornsby. We stream this live in August at koop.org. Remember, if it's theater, it's on Offstage and On the Air.
Step right up, the show's about to begin. Forget your troubles and raise your cup. Step right up, feast your eyes on the wonders of this world. Oh yeah. This one's for the dreamers.
It is Wednesday, August 2nd, 2023. It's still hot here in Austin, Texas. On the show today, our one and only magical guest is Magnolia Musical Theater, and we'll be talking about the theater itself and their show, Beauty and the Beast. And of course, we're going to have lively discussion of the world of theater in Austin, Chicago, New York, London, and Boise, Idaho. Stick with us.
To be misunderstood. And I know how it feels to be told you're not.
Okay, I can't sing along with this song, so I'm not going to. I'm just going to let it fade right out. Bo, Paul, welcome to
Hi.
The show.
It's nice to be here.
It's nice to have you here. I've had
you
as a guest a zillion times.
I have.
And this is the first time that you are co-hosting with me.
Yes. Thank you for having me.
I'm thrilled. For those people, I mean, our audience is very familiar with you in terms of the roles you play, but they don't know anything about you.
That's what people tell me.
That who the heck are you?
They see me, but they don't know who I am. My name is Bo Paul. I'm a actor in the local Austin theater community. I've done a lot of stuff for different stages. I've done stuff for City Theater. I've done stuff for a lot of different places, but I am also a member of the Biden Payne Council.
Heard of that?
Yes.
I think that Offstage and On the Air should get an award.
I'll see what I can do. But yes, we grant the awards at the end of the year, so people get a little pat on the back.
Well, I should say that Biden Payne not only does the Biden Payne Awards, but there's a pretty active throughout the community on other things as well. So
we try to be we try to like at least somewhat monitor terms of service. If something has gone awry, if you feel like you have encountered an unsafe workplace, for instance, if you are an actor or a designer, you can come to us, yeah. And we will do our best to see how we can remedy that.
They will go slap some wrists, let me tell you.
There will be wrist slapping.
So let's introduce the other folks that are here with us today so that they feel free to join in the conversation. It's all the folks from Magnolia Musical Theater. We have Andrew Cannata. Welcome back.
Hello. Thank you for having me.
We have Sebastian Vitale.
Hello, Lisa.
Mr. Rick Romer.
Hello.
Shay Lancaster.
Hi.
Okay, and Robert. I knew I wasn't going to be able to do it. Don't go away. Don't stop. I'm going to do it. Quintanilla. Okay, I added the U.
Yeah.
And then Susan Finnegan, who doesn't want to talk, but go ahead and talk.
Hi.
Yeah, you know what? That. So just so we know,
because sassy.
We talk about how I engineer my own show. That microphone does not work, Susan, so we're going to go to plan B. So welcome to Offstage and On the Air. Did anybody recognize that song that we played at the very beginning?
I couldn't hear it.
Oh, well, okay. It was called For the Dreamers, which I think you all are. And it was from a little show called Back to the Future, which I am reasonably certain, I'm like 93% sure, is opening tomorrow night.
Yes, it is. Because yeah. I know that because it's my birthday.
Is it?
Yes.
Oh, can I sing you my birthday song?
You can sing me all the birthday songs you want.
Okay, here it is. This is your birthday song. It isn't very long. So,
awesome.
Back to the Future.
I feel loved and seen.
Well, I did mention Back to the Future. Nicole, who is not here today, I'm reasonably certain she saw a preview of it and loved it. L-U-V-D, loved it. Rick Roemer shaking his head, which by the way, doesn't work on the radio. What does that mean?
You didn't have to point it out.
I'd like to point it out. That's the fun part of my job.
I'm sure it's a great show. It's interesting how New York and Broadway doesn't have a lot of imagination today.
Well, you know, one can say
they have a very deep well when it comes to movies that have already been made.
That's my point, exactly.
Well, and one could argue that that's been said for a long, long time.
And that's
because many of the shows and musicals were based on books.
I think, you know, 20 years ago, people would be outraged by, like, they're making, I can't believe that. That's one of my favorite sci-fi movies, and they're making it a musical. That's dumb. And now it's just like, oh, yeah, of course they're.
Yep. So that's Back to the Future. We'll, of course, talk about that next week when we will have guest co-host Brian Cheslick.
Yes.
On the air. But we have to say goodbye to a couple of theater stalwarts. One is Pamela Blair. She died at age 73. Does anybody recognize it? Rick Roemer does, because he's of a certain age.
Original Val and Chorus Line.
Original Val and Chorus Line. And she was also in the original Best of the Whorehouse that I did not realize. So she passed away of colon cancer. She was also married twice, divorced both times, but she was married to Don Scardino, who I had the pleasure of working with upon a time. So I did not know that. But she died due to complications of colon surgery, but she also had Clipper's disease.
That's the first that I've ever heard of it.
Oh, okay, good. I was about to say.
No.
I had neither.
It's rare.
And no, it's not a disease for barbers. Sweeney Todd did not have this disease.
You can't fix it with machine
oil.
It
is a chronic inflammation of the central nervous system, which doesn't sound fun at all. So we talked about her doing Chorus Line. She sang the iconic song, This and That. This and That.
Yes. If you're doing the play in high school, it's
This and That. It opened in 1975. It ran. Anybody want to guess how many performances Chorus Line ran for?
Oh God! It
originally. I need you to get right up on the microphone.
It went from 75 to 90. So
3,000.
6,137.
Wow!
And I think the very first time I saw Chorus Line was performance number 5,900, because I saw it towards the end of its run, and it was a tired show at that point. She was only in it for a year, and then she went on a tour. And as we mentioned, she also did Little House of Horrors. She did another musical called King of Hearts. Mm-hmm. She played it the youngest inmate in a mental hospital.
Do you know about that show?
No.
It's based on the movie.
Oh, the movie, which I love.
It's about a bunch of insane people who get out of their insane asylum and running the city.
Right, but it was also a Rudyard Kipling story.
Yeah. Melissa Martin was also in that on stage.
I didn't know they made a stage play of it. It's one of my favorite movies of all time, and it starred Sean Connery, Michael Caine, and who played Rudyard Kipling? I forgot, but it was... Oh, no, I'm thinking of The Man Who Would Be King. Never mind.
Very good movie, Lisa.
Also loved King of Hearts.
It's a great movie.
It is a great movie.
Someone should produce it here.
I might do.
I'm
that.
Surprised they haven't made a musical out of The Man Who Would Be King.
They should.
Yeah,
there could be a great football scene with a disembodied head. So her final Broadway appearance was in 1990 in A Few Good Men.
Yes, she played the Demi Moore role, if people have only seen the movie.
Which would be me. She was also in a bunch of movies and television. She did some soap operas. She was in the Annie movie. I don't know what she played. That's the end of that story. But I've got more underlines here. She was also in Promises. And she played Sugar, which was...
Donna McKechnie.
Yes. And it was choreographed by Michael Bennett. Michael Bennett, who, you know, I've always hailed, and I got to find the quote that I had in here. He said she evidently wasn't too crazy about him. In the her obit in the New York Times, it says, quote, in 1980, Miss Blair recalled the tension she felt while she was in A Chorus Line, mainly because of Mr. Bennett. Quote, he made you live the show, she told The Current. I mean, he'd make you think you were going to be fired at any moment.
That will keep you on your toes.
So So that's Pamela Blair. We also lost Inga Swenson.
Yes.
Who did a couple of things on Broadway, most notably...
she played Irene Adler in the
110 in the Shade.
110. Well, so that 110 in the Shade is different. That is the version of the cloud the Rainmaker.
Yep.
And yes, and then she also played. There was it wasn't called Baskerville. It was
thinking of the Baker Street.
Baker Street musical Al about Prince Sherlock Holmes, mm-hmm. and she played Irene Adler, who is of course famous from A Scandal in Bohemia, being mm-hmm. His ultimate nemesis.
So she's very well known for being in the sitcom Benson.
Yes.
But I know her from Soap, which Benson is a spinoff from. And here's a very embarrassing story about me. So back in those days, there was no DVRs or anything like that. So if you wanted to see a television show, you had to be there at that time, at that moment. And Soap came on every week. I was addicted to it. I turned down free Broadway show tickets to watch episodes of Soap. I loved it so much back in the day. Anyway, she passed away. I think she was...
she was 90.
90, yep.
Yes.
So, Godspeed to all of those people.
We lost Paul Rubens.
We did lose Paul Rubens. And he also did a Pee-wee show on Broadway. I don't know which one.
Yeah, so most people are familiar with his kids show, but the kids show was based on a... kind of a parody of a kid's show that was for adults that came out of the Groundlings, mm-hmm. who are the kind of Second City equivalent in L.A. And he developed that. He did not get cast for SNL, and he was very bitter about that. And he wrote his own show based around this Pee-wee character that he had developed for years.
And I'll tell you what,
it was a big hit.
That air quote kids show is not only for kids. I used to love Pee-wee's Big.
It operates on a lot of levels.
Pee-wee's Playhouse.
Pee-wee's Playhouse.
Cherry. I love Cherry. Who didn't like
Mecha
Cherry?
Mecha Lucka High, Mecha Johnny Ho.
Exactly. Let's see. What else do we want to talk about? There's a very interesting story in the New York Times about working with disabled actors talking about Martina Mayoke's Cost of Living, which just she was Tony nominated. She won the Pulitzer for it. I was about to say it's a two-hander, but it's not. I think it's four people in the cast. But the two main characters are, one is, I think they're both wheelchair-bound. One is an amputee and one is
cerebral palsy.
And they were played by, we say now, it just makes, complete sense. You're going to hire a disabled actor to do those things. But it hasn't been the case. Most of the time, non-disabled actors are playing disabled actors. And they call it, we've heard Sarah Silverman talk about Jew face. And of course, we have, so now they're calling that Crip face, which I had not heard that term before. But this was an interesting thing that I had heard. And so this, this article in the New York Times by Michael Paulson, Ruthie Feierberg. I thought it was Feinberg, but it's not, it's Feierberg. Is just talking about representation in general and a lot, but I did not realize this, that there was a University of Production of The Mountaintop in which Luther King was played by a white actor.
Yes, and the director was like, well, you didn't specifically say in the script. And then the person who wrote the script that we were talking about,
Martina Mayoke,
he specifically put, like, use disabled.
Regardless, it was a real human being.
Yeah. She said, please cast disabled actors.
Right.
But I find that amazing that somebody would have the gall
and temerity.
Temerity. That's the word I was trying to come up with. To say, well, Martin Luther King doesn't specifically say he's black.
we live in a world where John Wayne played Genghis Khan. So,
Well, here we all are. Also possible that this person had never heard of Martin Luther King.
Sadly.
I know. Andrew Cannata is looking at me and making a gesture. Like it's possible. I was making a joke, but no, it's possible.
No. Anything's possible in this world.
Yep. So I'll just read this little piece of this article from Broadway News. And this is said, it says, any character coming out of the script as disabled character definitely should be played by a disabled person, said Mario Porto, a disability consultant and founder of Access Broadway. Certainly, theater on Broadway and beyond could use more stories with disabled characters, but there's also the question of casting and collaborating with disabled actors as characters whose ability is not pre-scripted. And I think that's important for those of us who make theater to really try to open our mind and see opportunities for different types of actors to play different roles, as long as it's not specifically about that representation. So there's no reason that a disabled person couldn't play just about any character out there.
Well, Adam Roberts created the company, Tilt Company. Tilt. Mm-hmm. And that is great. I
mean, which just unfortunately closed.
What?
Yeah, Tilt is no more. So that's one of the two arts organizations that work with disabled people. ArtSpark is still around and working.
Yes.
Yeah. Check in the time. We have plenty of time to talk. But I just thought that was interesting. Martina Mayoc, not only did she write the play, I can never remember the cost of living, but she wrote Sanctuary City, right. which we just did recently
at Ground Floor Theater.
Ground Floor Theater, a little theater
the
called Ground Floor.
Ground Floor Theater.
Oh, thank you. So I do want to say that... just for the heck of it, that the opinions that are expressed here on Offstage and on the Air are not necessarily that of Co-op, its board of directors, or its staff. Simply the way I want to say things. Because we say some controversial things.
We do.
Because once again, for the third week in a row, I'm going to talk about how theater is in trouble. Mm-hmm. And there was another article in the New York Times by Michael Paulson just talking about the regions and how much trouble we are all in. And we talked about this last week as well, so I don't think I want to go into it too much. But there's just so many things working against theaters like all of ours right now.
It's a perfect storm economically. We're dealing with inflation, and the economy is getting better. People are going out and spending, but they're not to that point where they're getting beyond like, oh, now I can go to Target and buy something nice for myself. They're not going beyond that to like, I should donate to local theater because that's important.
Yeah, I also think it's kind of a sea change.
I agree.
Foundations are not giving money to arts organizations
that's
as much.
The main thing.
Government is not giving money to arts organizations as much. There's been cuts in the NEA. There's been fights going on to get the NEA to continue funding. We talked last week or the week before about some of the history of the NEA and the cuts that have been going on over the past 30, 40 years, which predate the pandemic.
There's definitely, you know, obviously there are political forces that are going against, you know, certain things that they see as agendas, and they can make a punching bag very easily out of the arts, and that's exactly what they're doing, and they're picking our pockets, basically.
So Michael Paulson went out and talked to 70 different regional theaters, and he's typically talking to the Lort theaters, the bigger theaters, like here in town, it would be Zach. But he's talking about, and these are the theater companies that are also in trouble. But one of the questions that came to him, this article was set up as an interview with Michael Paulson. Are these challenges unique to theaters, or are they true of nonprofits, art sector in general? And he answers, theater has some particular vulnerabilities. It's a niche art form, and lots of nonprofits pride themselves on developing new work, which means a show sometimes has a title or is by an artist that audience don't yet know. A bunch of people told me audiences want to be sure they're going to have a good time before they set aside their time and money.
Absolutely.
Hence is why Back to the Future is made into a
musical. Yes.
There you go.
Full circle.
But oddly enough, Broadway is not as in trouble as the regions.
I mean, the Mark Taper Forum closed in Los Angeles. That was a huge earthquake for the theater community.
Yep. So they also talk about some of the solutions, and a lot of the theaters are doing, there's a lot more collaboration between theaters going on. So some of this is really good. One theater did a city in Cincinnati, Connecticut. They were going to get together and share set building amongst theaters. And so there's lots of ways that we as an arts community can do stuff.
And I think that's one of the reasons and Austin's always duking it out to find spaces, to find money, what have you. But our community is amazingly strong, and there is a lot of people that are always willing to help the other guys down the block to, you know, put their stuff on. So that's what we got to do, man. It's we're all in the big boat.
Lots of work to do.
Absolutely.
There is an article in the New York Times, and by the way, there will be links to this when we post the show on Offstage and offstageonair.com that you can see it. But there's I'm not going to go through them because it basically mentioned every show on Broadway. But what Broadway shows to go see in August? But it's in sections like for a good laugh, to see something, some of the old timers. But if you're in New York, I just suggest you go see a Broadway show.
I think the two big ones are going to be in this month. They're going to be Back to the Future, and then there's also the Shark Play.
Yes,
which is interesting. It is about the troubled. Yes,
it's supposed to be amazing,
and it's about the troubled last days of shooting the movie Jaws, but. The writer and the guy who is playing the Robert Shaw character, Robert Shaw, who played Quint, is Ian Shaw, who is Robert Shaw's son, and he is a dead ringer. I've seen some clips, and it's just like it's jaw dropping.
It's called The Shark Is Broken.
Yeah.
And it played the West End before it got here, but yeah, I've heard nothing but good things about that. That and Shucked, of course.
Mm-hmm.
And there's a lot of these kind of zany parody things. Titanic, which is not on Broadway, but is just is just going a bit crazy. Nodding doesn't really work on radio.
Yeah, I've heard great things about Titanic.
That works on radio.
I have a friend working on Titanic, said that it's the most fun experience they've ever had.
I've heard good things about it. We just have a few more minutes left in this section, but is anybody a podcast listener to her?
Okay. Yes, absolutely.
I'm kind of addicted to podcasts, and there was a podcast called Theater People that stopped broadcasting in 2018, but he popped back into my feed to talk about this podcast called Stage Combat. Which I said, well, that sounds like fun. I'm going to go listen to it. And it is produced like a true crime murder mystery, but it's told in the first person by this man, and his name is, oh my God, Sean Hayden, who was in Goodspeed Opera House's 2019 production of Billy Madison, Billy Elliot, the ballerina boy. Yes, thank you.
Billy Madison should also be.
Yeah,
not the Adam Sandler not the Adam Sandler musical. The other one.
But it's interesting. It's two seasons, and I listened to it, and I'm just started season two. It's I encourage folks to listen to it because we talk about how mental health, and I know that at my theater the wants and needs of the actors supersede the needs of the production in so many ways, and we've tried to make that part of what we do, but that's not the way it used to be, and that's not the way Broadway or many other theater companies work. And taken at its face value, this is this one person's story from his side. He was like totally mistreated by another actor on stage and got no support from the theater company. But it's very interesting. But the skeptic part of me, or the cynical part of me, says we're only hearing this person's side of it. We're hearing nobody else's side of it. And he sounds like a saint that's been mistreated, but we're not hearing anybody else's side. So I don't know. It's interesting. I don't know whether I recommend to listen to it, but I'm kind of addicted at this point.
I mean, sometimes unreliable narrators can be the best narrators.
Yeah, that's true. And the last thing I'll just mention that you can go see in our website, offstageonair.com, or just go to the New York Times. There's a lovely article about the bartender at Sardi's who's been there for some like 50 years or something like that. I'm going to tell you exactly because I'm going to look at the... since 1968. So that's a while. I was 10. So that means he was there for 53 years. Congratulations. I figured it out. But he's just retiring. He just talks about what it was like to work at Sardi's back in the day and currently and some of the people that he served and how he looked at things. It's just a lovely feel-good
article. I mean, speaking of sea changes, that, you know, you're going from this, you know, how many eras of Broadway has he gone through?
Exactly. Yeah. And they do. They go through eras. I will also say that Sarah Paulson is coming back to the stage. She hasn't been on stage in a while, and I'm going to remember the name of the... it's
actionable.
Appropriate.
Appropriate.
Yeah. Brandon Jacob Jenkins. Brandon Jacob Jenkins. That's hard to say. Opening in December at the Hayes Theater. So let's take a little break, and we'll come back and talk all things that are bestial and beauteous at the same time. Let's... listen to Pamela Blair singing her famous song.
Well, dance 10 looks 3, and I'm still on unemployment. Dance,
we are back. You're listening to Offstage and On the Air with Lisa Sheps and Bo Paul.
Hey.
And we are here with the cast and creatives
the entire cast and creators of Beauty and the Beast.
Close to it, yeah.
And I'm going to reintroduce everybody. The Executive Artistic Director of Magnolia Musical Theater, Andrew Cannata.
Hello, everybody.
The director of this production, Rick Romer.
Hello there.
Silently acknowledging me is the music director, Susan Finnegan. She waved. And we have three of the actors. Belle is Shay Lancaster.
Hello.
The Beast is Robert Quintanilla.
Yeah, good job.
And Sebastian Vitale as Gaston, the bad guy.
Hello, everybody.
Hello. So, Rick, tell me about the show. I've never heard of it before.
You've never heard of Beauty and the Beast. You know, it's a really great story. And I think the goal for this production for all of us was, bottom line, to tell the story, not trying to do an animated version or do a cutesy version, but really tell the story of... In a nutshell, it's like, don't judge a book by its cover. I mean, you can fall in love with someone and you may not, that you may be totally surprised about.
Yeah.
And that's what it's about. It's about love, this show, and utensils and people dresses. I mean, it's interesting because I work as an actor and a teacher and a director with given circumstances. And I told the cast day one, this is a show. The circumstances of this show is an enchantress who she is coming across as an old beggar woman. She can turn the castle into this decrepit place and turn all the people into utensils and the prince into a beast. Those are the rules of your show, and that's what we did. We told the story.
Yeah, and amazingly well said. And I think that I'd be hard pressed to find people that don't know the story of Beauty and the Beast. But I think that the what you said is it's about love is very, very good. I made a joke that I had the whole cast here. We have three of the cast here. How large is your cast?
We have 25 actors.
25 actors.
And 11 live musicians.
Oh, amazing.
It's actually a pretty small cast for this show.
Yeah.
It is.
It's actually the smallest we could do to fill all of the roles, even with the doublings happening.
Right.
So this is the smallest version of Beauty and the Beast.
Understand what you mean when you say doubling.
I mean, a lot of these...
Tell folks what that means.
A lot of these characters, a lot of the actors on stage are playing villagers, they're playing utensils, they're playing other objects, they're playing castle folk. So they're playing a lot of different
More than
characters.
One role.
My dream is to play a utensil.
Where were you in auditions, Lisa?
We have walk-on positions.
I was there. I was at the Unified Auditions. You should have hired me. That's an inside joke, folks, that you do not get, because we were talking about it before the show. Well, great. So, Robert, you're playing the Beast. Mm-hmm. So I don't think we have to spend a lot of time talking about who is the Beast, but that's a tough role, I would assume.
It is. As a low voice, there are very few roles that are in our range, and it seems like with musical theater, it keeps getting higher and higher. So for me, this has
you
been...
You could play in Hadestown.
Yeah. Okay. And there's a few, there's a sprinkle. But for this, as a lead, it's been incredible and a dream of mine to do this role. And I tried to do a little bit of a more of a realized character and definitely not a cartoon style of it. And there's a lot of nuances that I put into him to see the journey. Even the vocal style, I'll use more of my classical training, the first act, second act. Once we transform into the prince, I'll try to do more of that kind of like musical theater sound. I like to show that journey of him as a beast in the first act and then him softening as he falls in love with Belle and she kind of enters his heart.
And Shay, you're playing Belle. And
I am.
You know, I say that the beast is hard to play, but playing the ingenue... I've never been an ingenue, never will be an ingenue.
Neither,
I'm like always
now.
Character. But ingenue's got to be really hard because it's really difficult to make it three-dimensional.
Right. It's tough. And we were joking early in the process because at the end of the show, he transforms into the prince and he has this beautiful solo. And my last line is, "It is you." And then I don't say anything the rest of the show. And it's wonderful. And it's the conclusion of the show. And I don't say a word the rest of the show. So it's been an interesting experience coming in and saying, this is a real human being. She lives in this village. She's unhappy. She lives with her father. She's gone through this traumatic event of losing her mother. That's where we start. That's where we begin. And so just taking her on the ride.
And unsupported by the community.
Right. Completely. Yeah. Just completely outcast. So feels a little bit like that's being a theater kid in public beast, high school, huh?
Is that issue?
Yeah.
She says, I mean, that's what connects her is being an outsider.
Yeah.
Well, while we just talked about you, too, y'all are going to do a number for us, aren't you?
Yes.
Does somebody want to set that number up? Somebody on a microphone? Anybody? I don't care who. Okay,
set up the
scene.
Something there.
This is it's called Something There. It happens in Act Two when they decide to have, well, Mrs. Potts gives them a bowl of soup and gets them to sit down together. And then that's just the first time that Belle realizes there's more there than meets the eye. She may have been wrong about this guy. And then the Beast says the same thing. There's more to her than he thought. That's really what this is about.
I just turned my microphone. This is Shay Lancaster and Robert Quintanilla singing a song from Magnolia Musical Theater's Beauty and the Beast.
There's something sweet and almost kind, but he was mean and he was coarse and unrefined. But now he's dear and so unsure, I wonder why I didn't see it there before.
She glanced this way, I thought I saw, and when we touched, she didn't shudder at my paw. No, it can't be, I'll just ignore. But then she's never looked at me that way before.
Oh, short caught me! Sweet. Caught me off
yeah,
guard.
Yeah, short and sweet.
Excellent. That's such a beautiful number. I approve.
Yeah, it's one of the numbers that makes it from.
You should put that in the show.
Yeah. Right.
It's one of the numbers that actually is across from the stage show and in the movie as well. A lot of the solo numbers that we have don't actually exist
for the stage
in the animation.
Yeah. Which I've never seen the movie.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Really?
Yeah.
Good
I know.
Lord.
I know. It's crazy. Well, I.
Have you seen Jean Cocteau's version at least?
I don't think so.
Oh,
the new one?
Jean Cocteau's version is from the
Jean Cocteau.
Yes, yeah. It is not a new one, but it's very beautiful. You should check it out.
Okay.
Yeah. Yeah. So I'm a Luddite. Andrew, can you tell me and my listening audience? Magnolia Musical Theater is a new theater. We're just going to talk about that in a second. But I want to know why open with Beauty and the Beast. Why now?
Wow. Well, I will say Beauty and the Beast was actually our second choice on the list and the first choice due to a lot of shows being reopened and licensing available after the pandemic was already taken. But actually, Beauty and the Beast is a beautiful one for us to have chosen because my wife and I have wanted to start a company like this for a long time. We actually tried to do this when we moved to Nashville as well, to bring this same concept to a new city when we were there for 2 years. The concept didn't really take. People were like, what are you talking about? Like, this is outdoors in the summer, and people would just come and put something down. Like, what are you talking about? So there was just no precedent for up there now. But my wife and I actually met doing Beauty and the Beast at Zilker Theater Productions in 2008. That's where we met. It's not where we started dating or got married, but to bring Beauty and the Beast as our first production, I think, is special in a number of ways. And the name of the title helps us a lot as a new organization, because one of the hardest things about being a new theater company is name recognition, getting your name out there, getting enough publicity to make sure people know about it.
Yeah. Well, and we're going to learn more about the founding of the theater and all that in just a little while. We're going to take a little break right now, and we're going to come back. We're going to talk about some local stuff, and then we'll get more Beauty and the Beast. And we're going to go out right now with a lovely song from a show called Beauty and the Beast, called Maison de Lune. We will be right back.
At the Maison de Lune, do I make myself entirely clear?
We are back. You're listening to Offstage and on the Air with Lisa and Bo.
Yes.
And now we're going to just spend a little second talking about what's going on here in town, other than Beauty and the Beast. Like, who cares what else is happening, right? But one of the things that I want to just talk about is this show that the Rude Mex is doing called Split Britches, which looks fascinating. And if you don't know the Rude Mex, shame on you. And go to, I believe it's rudemex.org or something like that to find out what they've got. But they are nationally known, and they've done stuff, and they've been around for a long time.
And they've been kind of struggling in Austin insofar as they lost their longtime space.
They did.
The city took it over, which was, not nice of them. But and so that they've found a residence of sorts.
Well, they've got a beautiful little space, and they've got announcements to come about future plans, mm-hmm. which I think are going to be very, very exciting. Actually, I think they've already announced it, but you should go and look up that stuff. But this is Split Britches. It's called Split Britches and Last Gap, a Recalibration. It runs just August 3rd through 6th. And it's been reviewed by the New York Times. It says not just one of the 40-year-old company's best pieces, but among the most evocative art to emerge from the COVID era. it's described thusly: how to survive a loss. First, you recalibrate. Equipped with a bulletproof vest, some know-how, and a touch of irony, two icons of lesbian feminist theater use spoken word and movement to call as they call in response to urgent global predicaments. And it just looks it looks lovely, and it's got a very vivid picture, which I'm showing to my studio audience here, called Split Britches. It's not easy to say.
Split Britches.
Split Britches.
It's a red leather, yellow leather, Split Britches, Split Britches.
Exactly, and you can get information for that at rudemex.com. Other things happening in and about town that I have that are ongoing right now is Matilda is playing out at Zilker till the 12th of this month. Small Steps is playing also till the 12th of this month. That's the Shrewds production. They were on our show last week, I think. They're playing out at Hyde Park. Summerstock Austin, Wizard of Oz in Greece. I think one of them might be done, and it's just the other one now, but I'm not sure. Andrew, looks like you were going to say something.
Yes, that is correct.
Say that again, Andrew.
I believe Greece is still going.
Yeah, I think you're right. I just had a lovely conversation with Ginger Morris about that very thing. So that you can find information about that at impactarts.org. It plays through the 12th. Beyond August Productions' God of Carnage also plays through this weekend. Next weekend, August 13th at the Rosette. Beauty and the Beast is playing somewhere. So that's Magnolia Musical Theater.
It's at BK's. Hill Country Galleria.
At Hill Country. We're going to get into that, but it's at Hill Country Galleria through the 13th of August. City Theaters, Romeo and Juliet, is closing this weekend on the 6th.
Is that City Theaters?
Yeah.
Okay, that has been canceled due to unforeseen circumstances. So if you do have tickets or anything like that, you can contact them. They will refund you.
I did not know that, Bo.
Yes.
But now that you say that out loud, I've heard some things. Jenna and the Whale is playing at Ground Floor Theater, opening August 10th. And then over at Zach is Head Over Heels, which is going to be a lot of fun, which opens on the 9th of this month. Anybody else have any local stuff that I did not mention you want to talk about? Nope. No, I'm getting a lot of shakes in the head.
That all scans.
So we'll just skip right to Today in Theater History. Does that work?
Yes.
Okay. I got a lot of people standing very far away from mics. If they want to talk, they're going to have to scream. They're going to
We'll move closer when we want to talk.
Okay. Thank you,
Andrew. Getting their steps in.
Well, good, because I'm going to need some help. We have some birthdays of people I don't know. One of those is Mary Louise Parker. I know who she is.
I was about to say.
It's her birthday. But people I don't know that maybe you guys do is Anthony Crivillo or Crivillo. It's his birthday. And John Ellison Conley. Good. I'm glad I'm not the only one. Opening on this date in 1979 is Gilda Radner Live. And I wish I had gotten to see that. I was in New York at the time, did not get to see it. Also in 1965, I was not in New York, Oliver opened on this date.
Yes. Oliver with an exclamation point.
Thank you. Mm-hmm. And actually, if you're going to search for it, it's best to put that exclamation point in.
It is.
Otherwise, you get a lot of other stuff.
You'll get Dickensy stuff.
you'll get Dickensy stuff, but more you'll get Oliver stuff.
Oh, yes, because the dog and the animated series.
Yeah, and anybody named Oliver.
That's true. Look at Oliver Reed, which you don't want to go into that.
So, Bhopal, are you working on anything right at this very moment?
I am, but I cannot mention it.
You cannot
because
mention
we have
it?
Not made any official announcement.
Okay.
But just say keep your eyeballs peeled around about a month from now.
Okay, you doing Hamilton?
Yes.
Okay, good. That's good. that's amazing.
Yes, and I'm not playing Martin Luther King in it. I'm going to say.
Yeah. That's what I was going to... I was going to cast you as Martin Luther King in my version of The Mountaintop, which would be subtitled The End of Ground Floor Theater.
Exactly. By the end of my acting career, I've always known it's coming.
Yep. Okay, we're going to take another little break. We're going to hear a little bit from Oliver from the 1994 London production starring Jonathan Pryce singing Got a Pick a Pocket or Two, which is about the best English accent you're going to get from me. we will be right back.
In this life, one thing counts in the bank, large amounts. I'm afraid these don't grow on trees. You've got a bigger pocket or two.
We are back. You're listening to Offstage and On Air with Lisa Sheps and
Bhopal
and a whole bunch of other people that I'm just gonna throw out their names right here. We've got Andrew Cannata, Rick Romer, Susan Finnegan, The Quiet, Shay Lancaster, Robert Quintanilla, and Sebastian Vitale. The first one that gets up to a mic will be the first person I talk to. Sebastian.
Yes, I'm here.
Tell us about the character.
One gets to the mic like that Gaston.
Exactly.
What, you're playing the bad guy.
I'm playing the bad guy. I'm usually playing the bad guy. I'm the villain. The egocentric narcissist. I cannot say any bad word, but I'm not. Yes, I am not a great guy, which is very related to me.
That is so not true. Take that back.
But I'm playing this role. It is really fun, and he gets to have all the fun parts with LeFou, playing by Matt Connolly, great, great partner in crime. And we're having fun, and people like this character, even though he's the villain.
Mm-hmm. Well, that's amazing. And I have to say that really good villains, you know, to play any character, there has to be a redeeming value. And oftentimes, and interestingly enough, going back to that, the podcast, Stage Combat, the guy's playing Dad in Billy Elliot, who is a really difficult role to play because he's racist and misogynistic and homophobic in Act 1 and turns a new leaf in Act 2, and it's got a lot of character development that has to happen. And most really good written villains have that as well, and you can find the humanity in them, which causes them to act the way they do.
Well, I don't think Gaston does that. Like, he does not redeem himself.
No, well, no, he doesn't have to redeem himself, but you do have to find the humanness in a character to play him, do you not?
And try to be honest and try to be real. That's what Rick asked me to do, and so I'm playing this type of character.
Yeah, I was really clear working with Sebastian that I didn't want... That's such an iconic character. I mean, physically, and didn't want that iconic, you know... Big black hair and all, and so we're really trying to make him. Yes, he is narcissistic. Yes, he is totally into himself. But Sebastian is able to make it organic. Honest.
Sure.
Which is interesting, and so it's not. It's not the typical Gaston you'll see in productions.
You really have to play the character without an ounce of self-awareness, because if he has any, he realizes what a jerk he is.
Yeah, I love Gaston.
Yeah, well, and the villains are the villains and the characters are always the funnest to play.
Delicious roles to play.
Delicious, yummy, as we say. And we're going to hear a song from you, are we not?
Yes, please.
Can you tell us what song we're going to be listening to? And
it's called Me.
My favorite subject.
Lovely. So, okay, I guess we don't need anything else. Let's stop and listen to Sebastian Vitale and Shay Lancaster singing a song from Magnolia Musical Theater's A Beauty and the Beast.
I can see that we will share all that love implies. We shall be the perfect pair, rather like my thighs. You are face to face with destiny. All roads lead to the best things in life are all's well that ends with me. Escape me, there's no way, certain as do re bell when you marry. So bell, what will it be? Is it yes, or is it oh, yes?
I just don't deserve you.
Who does? Me!
But thanks for asking.
Delicious, as they say. That was fun. I said, I'm going to make that my audition song. So, Rick, tell us about when the show's playing now, correct?
It is.
So give us the deets. Tonight. Give us the deets. Tell us where it's playing, because that may be new to folks.
It's playing
and how
the
they
Hill,
get information.
Hill Country Galleria. It's outdoors. It's playing through August 13th, Wednesdays through Sundays at 8 p.m. I would suggest, because honestly, by about 6:45, 7 o'clock, there's already a lot of people with blankets down.
Yeah.
So there's a lot of places to eat around there or get a drink.
Yes, there is.
So I would get there, go get early, and then get something to eat. And
there's
come
also
back
an HEB. You can do grocery shopping.
Exactly, or Whole Foods. But yeah, plays the next 2 more weeks.
Okay, amazing.
It's so also not that bad. The heat, it's at 8 p.m., so it's great.
Right.
Yeah. Yeah, so we want to, we always time our outdoor shows so we lose light so we can throw light on stage.
Yes.
Yes, amongst other things.
Light gets lost about 9.
Yeah. Well, it's always interesting. I've always found it fun to go watch the outdoor shows and just watch how natural light dissipates and the stage light takes up. I find that kind of
fun.
What
was interesting in this is that, there's 2 magical transformations that happen. One happens at the top of the show, mm-hmm. from Prince to Beast, and we had to do that in total light. With no darkness.
Yeah, amazing.
Challenging.
So where can folks go to get information about this show?
You can go to MagnoliaMT, which stands for musicaltheater.org. Yeah. Our website has all of the information on there.
Wonderful. Let's talk about Magnolia Theater for just a moment. If I'm incorrect, this sort of came out of, I think it was Little Shop that Zilker did during the pandemic or towards the end of the pandemic, that they weren't out at Zilker and they went to the Galleria.
That's right.
And that was the impetus or the jumping point for this. Can you tell us a little bit about
that? What was really interesting about that year, this was in 2021, and as maybe people don't know, but Zilker Theater Productions does not own the Hillside Theater. That is owned by City of Austin.
Correct.
So City of Austin closed it down due to pandemic-related issues.
Protocols,
correct. And so Zilker was actually looking for a home, and I was part of that search and part of that move of the show. And we actually went to 12 different venues. And what was really interesting to me is any other city we went to was dying to have something like this. I mean, we went to Pflugerville, Round Rock, Dripping Springs, Georgetown, Bee Cave. I went all the way out to Spicewood. Cities want something like this for their communities.
Sure.
Not just to bring people in from other communities, but they want it for their communities. And that's what happened with Bee Cave. Bee Cave, we brought a Little Shop out there. It was such a big success for them, but also for their communities, that their community was reaching out to the city saying, when are we going to have a summer musical again? And so the city of Bee Cave reached out to me after my time with Zilker was up and said, what can we do? And this just seemed like the perfect opportunity for, again, my wife and my dream to open something for another community like this. Austin and surrounding communities have grown so much. I can promise you in that search in 2021, we could probably have 4 or 5 of these going
sure.
in a summer, and every one of them would be packed.
Well, we know that Buda has a summer theater program, as well as we just learned here on the show, we had a summer program in San Marcos all outdoor theaters. So yeah. I never really thought of that before, but you're absolutely right.
Yeah.
I'm curious, because you're operating in a different community from Austin, when you cast, what's your casting pool? Are you going just Austin, or are you expanding that to other areas?
So we are open auditions, and I would say the majority of our folks are coming from the Austin area, but we've had a lot of people audition from out of state. We had people from within state, other colleges. So we actually have two actors from Abilene Christian in our production as well. But we had 140 people audition for this show, and we had to pare that back to 25 for the cast we could have. So
you could have launched the full-scale production.
That's right, yeah. Now, the other limitation on that is, you know, the size of our stage. So part of the experience is watching Magnolia Musical Theater build a theater in a shopping center, because the infrastructure does not exist. We have to bring everything in wherever we go to actually put this show on.
So I'm relatively familiar with the gallery over there, and it's kind of like a strip mall kind of situation, a straight line of stores. Where is the theater in relation to?
It's not a strip. I mean, it's a little community. I mean, there is a grassy knoll area right in the middle of the you know where the library is? It's right, we perform right in front of the library.
Oh, lovely.
They call it their Central Plaza. So there's even a pavilion. So if you're looking for covered seating, high back chair seating, covered seating, there's a pavilion there that can seat about 200 people, as well as the lawn that can seat about 800 people.
And a bar right behind it.
Lovely.
Several.
Well, you know, based on the website and everything I've heard, Magnolia Musical Theater is here to stay. Are you care to tell us what you're going to do next year?
So I would love to, but I don't know what we're doing next year, because we are actually letting our audience pick the show for next year. So we have met as an organization, picked our budget for next year, and then found shows that we can realistically get the licensing to. I think in my experience in the past, if you leave it open to audiences, they're going to pick Hamilton, they're going to pick Wicked, they're going to pick something you cannot get the rights to. So we have actually set it up with 5 shows that the audience can do a survey for at our show.
Can you share those with us?
I can, yes.
Yeah, shoot.
So we have the 5 selections are, and I won't do it in order of what's leading right now.
Please.
But we have Into the Woods, we have Annie, we have Footloose, we have Xanadu, and we have Elf. Musical. Oh, so Elf is a really interesting one, because this is with a partnership idea that the City of Bee Cave and the Galleria and I have talked about a lot, which is doing Christmas in July. And I don't mean just bringing the musical. I mean the Galleria decorating for Christmas and all of the storefronts acting as if it was
a
Christmas.
It'd be so fun. Oh my
gosh. I think it'd be fun too. And let's face it, in December in Texas is still kind of summery.
Yeah,
I'm just saying.
Yeah,
you know,
I think last year I was wearing shorts during Christmas.
Yeah, you don't have to hire a snow machine to get Texas in December.
Well, that is all really incredible and amazing, and I wish you the best of luck with the organization. And I guess I don't need to wish y'all luck, but a good last few shows. It sounds like y'all are really busy and doing really well.
Yeah.
How many people, Andrew, have seen the show?
We've seen 5,600 people out there so far.
Yeah. That's great.
In 2 weeks.
That's how many people fit in Ground Floor Theater for one show. In my dreams.
On a good night.
Well, thank you all so much for coming on Offstage and on the Air. It was a blast.
Thank you,
thank
Lisa.
You for having
thank
us.
You.
Wonderful. Well, that was Andrew Cannata, Rick Romer, Susan Finnegan, Shay Lancaster, Robert Quintanilla, and Sebastian Vitali, all with Magnolia Musical Theater's Beauty and the Beast. Play now through August 13th. For more information, magnoliamt.org. And we are going to do another song from Beauty and the Beast. What did I choose? No Matter What. We'll be right back.
No matter what you do, I'm on your side. And if my point of view is somewhat...
We are back. You're listening to Offstage and on the Air with Lisa and Bo Paul. Bo, thank you so much. We're coming right up on the end.
Absolutely. This has been such a pleasure. Thank you for having me on.
I've loved having you on. It's like this is the first time that we've like seen each other at this angle.
Yes, we're on the same end of the table for once. So that's awesome.
And I'm looking forward to hearing about your mystery show that you can't talk about it.
I will tell you as soon as I can.
As a theater producer, I appreciate you being thin-lipped about it, because the hardest thing to do is to keep that secret, especially when you have things cast well in advance.
I told Mom.
Okay, that's good. And so what's your prescription for the Austin theater community, you think, to keep us alive and functioning?
I think it's long said, but it's said for a reason, that word of mouth is our best friend. And what I would say is, if you're listening to us today and you have friend or friends who does not go to the theater, grab them and take them along with you, because the more asses we get in the seats, the more people we realize how important this is to us. We build our community out, because the community is not just artists. It's not just producers, directors, designers, what have you. It's our audience. We don't exist without you. So if you can expand that audience, you're helping us. And money. You can always send us money.
Money's always good. You know, that's what I've always said. Actually, in my 20 years in Austin, that's what I've thought about, is that a lot of people in the city of Austin don't know that theaters, small theaters, are even in existence. I think, you know, if you got into West Austin and you say, is there theater? The answer is going to be yes. And then you say, well, name one. Yeah. And they'll come up with Zach. And then you go, great, what are another one? And they probably won't come up with anything other than Bass Concert Hall, Paramount, or something like that.
Absolutely. You know, places where touring acts play. Yeah, I have had friends bring other friends into theater, and like, now we're at 3 years later and they are, practically on the board at Vortex or some other place,
sure,
or High Park Theater or what have you. That's how you build a community, is just making people aware and take them to a show.
Yeah, take them to a show.
They're going to like it.
And tell your friends. That's what I make a lot of times when I do my curtain speech. I tell my audiences to promise to talk to other people and tell them the theater's out there. And I list them all off, because it's not, you know, the success of all other theater companies aids to the success in my theater company. So, so again,
absolutely,
thank you for being on the show.
Of course.
And look forward to doing it again. Look forward to having you a guest on this mystery show that you're doing and hear all about it.
All right.
And that's it for Offstage and On the Air today. We have the Austin Common Radio Hour coming. I'm sorry, the Austin Cooperative Hour coming up. And this week, it is indeed the Austin Common Radio Hour with John Hoffner. And he's sitting here trying to wheedle the microphone away from me. But I'm going to hold on to it for just a few seconds longer while I wish him a very good show. You guys can stand back and wait for us to next week when we tell you and show you what's offstage and on the air. And this is from 110 in the Shade. This is Simple Little Things. We'll see you next week.
Not all dreams are great big dreams. Some people's dreams are small. Not all dreams have to have a golden fleece, or any kind of fleece at all. My dreams, like my name, are very plain. No shining dark.